Our first presenter, Dana Bates, did her doctoral work which examined funk music and cultural change to the repertoire of Prince. Her publications generally focus on gender and sexuality in music. Today she's presenting preliminary ideas on how the emerging field of new materialisms, can relate to musicological work. And Dana says that how exactly this relates to funk and sexuality remains a secret which she will happily share over coffee. So, there's an Easter egg to this presentation. You know, it'll be more to dig it up. So thank you. The paper will be entitled Music, Meaning, and New Materialisms.
Perhaps not the sexiest title ever, but funkiest, but it is descriptive. So the title of this conference, Music and Labor, prompts us to consider the work that happens in relation to music. For us as musicologists, the clearest instance of that work is our own research. Musicology as labor is the subject I explore in this paper. Understanding our academic research as labor invites us to think about what our activities do in the world. While I will draw attention to the kinds of outcomes that some musicological work has had, my emphasis will be on the kinds of work and the kinds of outcomes that musicology can have. In particular, I will describe some recent developments associated with new materialist research to consider how our work as musicologists might be positively affected by engaging more directly with new materialisms. And I appreciate the irony of reading about new materiality on an iPad. The understanding that academic work has real material consequences in the world is not new. Eve Kosofsky-Sedgwick once reminded us that feminists in the 1970s posed the questions, who is speaking to whom, and what do these answers do? Along these lines, I then ask, what is it that our work as musicologists does? What kinds of experience do we take up and play up? How can we work towards our goals more effectively? In other words, I suggest that our efforts need not intensify, but change. Perhaps a different kind of work might lead us more directly to some of our goals. My discussion of musicology and labor therefore sees academic expression as quite literally effective. That is, our work affects both ourselves and others in the world. It is undeniable that our writing and speaking gives voice and power to the ways we perceive the world. This work is therefore a privilege. Yet our work is inherently engaged in representation. We hope to represent our experiences and those of others accurately. Our work is therefore also a form of responsibility to ourselves and others. As with any form of labor, our work must necessarily be manageable. That is, methods have been devised to meet the requirements that the study of music presents. We rely on routines that make our work more efficient and carry our voices further. In order to make our work manageable, these routines are required to limit the influence of external factors, information that might be extraneous. My point is that by returning our attention to the responsibilities and aims that we have to ourselves and others, we might see that our practices have not kept up with changes in the kinds of music being made and the ways people experience music. Our work has become slightly disconnected from the environment it takes place in. Two classes of humanities research are described by Rosie Braidotti in a recent anthology entitled New Materialisms, Ontology, Agency, and Politics. Human lives may be understood through the Greek terms bio, as in biology, and zoo, as in zoology. She notes that bios is defined as intelligent life, which gives us a pathway for examining cognition, metaphysics, and symbolic expression. The zoo, or zoe, on the other hand, is what used to be called nature, the deep vitality of the embodied self. The reason why Braidotti calls attention to this dual-sided human subject is because she finds her more basic experiences, her embodied and material conditions, to be displaced by an emphasis throughout the humanities on symbolic and cognitive types of research. In other words, the concepts and methodologies we work with have been very successful in describing the abstract and discursive dimensions of music and other experiences. They've been far less successful in describing and authorizing the material structures and relations at the base of our experiences. Historically, very similar perspectives have been presented within the humanities and the natural sciences. Diana Kuhl and Samantha Frost summarize this history to show that a turn towards new materialist humanities research is long overdue. Many scholars in the natural sciences have already returned to a kind of materialist orientation. Earlier, structuralist methodologies were highly influenced by Euclidean geometry and Newtonian physics. These all followed a linear and deterministic logic based in realism and materialism. That worldview is reflected in the work of Descartes and informs later empiricist and positivist research. 20th century physicists described matter in very fluid and indeterminate ways. Einstein's work, fractal mathematics, and chaos theory all portrayed the universe as highly unpredictable and volatile. This was accompanied by descriptions of the sign as arbitrary, hashtag poststructuralism. Aleatoric music, analyses of musical reception, and descriptions of the construction of identity through music emerged towards the end of that century. Our focus turned towards immaterial fields of study and away from the structures of music, matter, and selfhood. Analyses of discourse, rhetoric, performativity, and cognition gained prominence in our discipline and others. Musicological work was highly influenced by post-structuralist models of physics and philosophy. Musical meaning was shown to be governed by social discourse and psychic processes. Kuhl and Frost highlight emerging work in the natural sciences that focuses again on material structures and causal relationships. For instance, they point to recent studies of genetics and genomes, advances in particle physics, and a new focus on how we physically interact with digital technologies. The worldview suggested by these studies can be helpful to our work in musicology. As we will see, the return to material fields of inquiry that these researchers demonstrate is far from a regression. In fact, many are moving closer to their goals. A number of disciplines are experiencing a renewal due to their questioning of post-materialist perspectives. It is important to acknowledge that the current post-materialist orientation of our discipline and others originated in response to important needs and enabled important advancements. For example, it allowed us to move away from essentialist concepts of music and selfhood. It enabled a great deal of interdisciplinary work and brought attention to the non-structural forces that shape musical meaning. It may be that popular music studies have been especially influenced by post-structuralist thought for two reasons. Firstly, our research might be strongly drawn to topics other than form and structure. Meaning in popular music could be constructed more so by metamusical elements than denoted by actual sounds and notes. Secondly, popular music, especially rock, often carries a strong theme of subversiveness. This might set the stage for the examination of difference rather than norms, fragmentation rather than cohesion, and discourse rather than structure. It is no coincidence that popular music studies took off soon after post-structuralism spread across humanities departments and science labs. Before describing the kinds of ideas that are associated with new materialism, I think it is important to dispel some myths associated with it. Firstly, new materialists generally do not treat materiality as a given. Most find it more helpful to consider the ways in which physical things emerge and are sedimented for us, the way they materialize. Building on this, materialization is rarely described as dualistic. Although 20th century modernism and postmodernism both acknowledge material and discursive fields of meaning, these were often described as separate forces that interact. As I mentioned earlier, critical theorists gave priority at various times to either material or ephemeral fields. One or the other was generally treated as primary. The signifier was either fixed or free. Breaking from those traditions, Karen Barad describes materiality and discourse as always entangled. As she states, they have not grown up separately from one another. These ideas help frame our work as musicologists. For example, we're reminded that notes and sounds are fundamentally meaningful. We are also reminded that it is impossible to separate the structural elements of music from their reception and interpretation. A clear breakdown of the three themes associated with new materialist work is offered by Diana Kuhl and Samantha Frost. Perhaps the easiest theme to relate to is that of bioethics, or living matter. Instead of describing the body as an effect of psychic and social processes, new materialists attempt to describe its primary significance, how it emerges as a physical thing, and how it informs what we experience and what we do. For instance, bodily sex is being described in sharply non-poststructuralist ways. Jay Prosser and Vivian Namaste show that body morphology has direct and unmediated effects on the psyche and not just the other way around. Musicologists have taken part in similar efforts to represent material circumstances in genuine and non-pathologizing ways. Some of us have worked to represent musical practices using ethnographic methods. Rather than reducing experiences and identities to their figurative or allegorical implications, their literal and actual musical practices are described. For example, the lives and conditions of East Coast Canadian musicians have been examined by Beverly Diamond and Heather Sparling. Clear accounts of native hip-hop have been produced by Charity Marsh. A recent article by Stephen Amico demonstrates this integrated approach to embodiment and identity. In contrast to queer work that emphasizes displacement and instability, he finds non-pathologizing ways of understanding place, race, bodily sex, and stable identifications. Some ethnographies have come under scrutiny for appearing to demonstrate a kind of false realism or structuralism. New materialist thought helps affirm not only the importance of empirically based research, but also the fundamental relationship between material conditions and cognitive processes. The second theme, that of ontology, can seem somewhat abstract. Matter itself is being reconceptualized as primary and not just an effect of social processes. A clear way to understand this is by looking at the etymology of the word material. The word is rooted in the latter term mater, meaning mother. This suggests that things have definite origins. These origins can potentially be traced and known. The implication is that music, bodies, and other objects are rooted not only in untraceable cognitive processes, but also have discrete and tangible origins. They have a genetic lineage. This is not to say that matter is taken at face value. Matter becomes rather than matter is. This helps us approach music in new ways. Instead of showing how musical meaning is socially constructed, Philip Tagg highlights the role that musical structures have in determining how songs are received. Musical sounds gain their effect from how they formally resemble previous sounds. This is not necessarily a new concept, but a new emphasis on form and structure. A similar emphasis is found in descriptions of salsa music by Patriev Roman Velazquez. She traces how salsa was altered as it moved into British live music clubs and focuses on how some formal elements of salsa are unchangeable, definitive, inherently productive. The resilience of some musical structures is striking. Suzanne Cusick has shown us that the way a musician moves through space provides unique information about a piece of music. This knowledge cannot be gained through analysis or historiography. Her work is ontological since it reminds us that music is not a strictly cultural or cognitive phenomenon. It is also inherently comprised of material components that cannot be negated or explained away. All these texts attend fundamentally to materiality and how it emerges. It is worth coming back to the point that the methodologies we use do work. They reveal some things and bring some experiences to the forefront while necessarily sweeping others aside. They organize our perception. Lifting some experiences above others is not necessarily a matter of bias, personal taste, or political contrivance. Yet clearly, the way we conduct research has a concrete impact. New musicologists and queer theorists in the early 1990s raised the profile and legitimacy of many new identities, in part by adopting a post-structuralist lens. In order to address the goals of new materialists, our way of working must be revised. This focus on methodology constitutes the third and final theme described by Kuhl and Frost. Some scholars are engaging with a new form of empiricism. For instance, Vivian Namaste attends first and foremost to how people live and experience their everyday social worlds. She incorporates more abstract methods only in a subsequent and subsidiary way. By adopting a somewhat realist methodology, she shows exactly how identities emerge. These new kinds of empirical research are reflexive and critical, yet are firmly grounded in observation and experience. Perhaps even greater enthusiasm can be seen in the growing use of phenomenological methods. It's easy to see why phenomenology might be embraced by scholars interested in materiality. The field was developed in order to bridge material and ephemeral perspectives. Perhaps because phenomenology places emphasis on the observing subject, it has drawn severe criticism at times, notably from post-structuralist angles. In reference to phenomenology, Foucault wrote, "If there is one approach that I do reject, however, it is that which gives absolute priority to the observing subject." Recent phenomenologists generally agree with Foucault that absolute authority cannot be accorded to observation. While they often integrate genealogical and other critical perspectives into their work, they nevertheless attribute primary significance to observation and experience. Henry Rubin employs phenomenological methods, along with genealogical ones, to produce an understanding of bodily sex that departs from strict constructivist accounts. Perhaps more widely read is the phenomenological work of Sarah Ahmed. Broadly, she finds that constructivist accounts of gender fail to address the material conditions of women's lives. She returns to stories of how women move through the world in order to remind us of the money and energy that are required to make bodily sex materialize. Musicologists have certainly not been absent from this new phenomenology. Anne Danielson asks what it means to be in a funk groove. To answer this, she examines how listeners sense time and experience memory. She finds these are suspended in the present moment of being in a groove. Harris Berger employs phenomenology in a very different way. His aims are more ethnomusicological. He examines musical scenes by synthesizing the observations of multiple individuals into one intelligible whole. By placing subjective experience at the center of his research, he is able to tease out a wide range of formal and discursive musical elements. As we can see, new materialists require methodologies that are plural rather than singular. Empiricism and phenomenology are often used in conjunction with other critical perspectives. Our methods must be multimodal. Such an approach was anticipated by Sedgwick. She laments the deadlock between constructivism and essentialism, stressing that both hold dangers and neither produces unmediated truths. Her solutions to this impasse are not the same as those being developed by new materialists, but her high regard for empirical research suggests that materialists are extending a tradition that reaches back far through the history of the humanities. To close, I would like to draw attention once more to the self-perpetuating nature of our work as musicologists. We have seen that our research does not only follow certain methods, but also authorizes the experiences these methods reveal. Our methods are oriented. They narrow our focus to select parts of ourselves and our music. Experiences and identities that lie outside of this focus are not only missed by our research, they are proscribed. When this area of proscription, this shadow, extends over our material lives, our bodies, notes, and sounds, we alienate ourselves from our closest and most intimate experiences. New materialists attempt to reverse this alienation from materiality. Many are in dialogue with the natural sciences, generating accounts of the world that underscore morphology, agency, causality, and origins. This is radical since it departs significantly from the constructivist and post-structuralist stories that have predominated over recent decades. A reorientation towards materiality and its emergence is far from taxing to us as musicologists. I have shown how musicologists are already making some use of these ideas, how we may continue to do so, and why we might care. It's my sense that by looking to other fields of study that authorize materiality, our writing can become more aligned with our experiences. Our work gains resonance. It is for us to decide how best to shape the conditions around us through our research. We choose daily how to best represent and authorize ourselves and others. The privilege of doing this work deserves frequent re-evaluation of the work habits we've developed. New materialist concepts can certainly help us review our routines so that our work may affect the world in ways that are more genuine, balanced, and direct. Thank you.
One thing I'm curious about, and I think you're right that, you know, methodology is crucial in all this, not just you, but I mean, you know, the race theorists you were talking about.
Yeah.
One thing I'm wondering about is whether the list of places that, you know, sort of a new materialist, you know, attitude is maybe manifesting itself tend to be borrowing from existing methodologies and approaches which are material but less formalist. You know, and of course, historically, the kind of the antagonism between formalist and less formalist approaches is something that sort of runs really deep in musicology. So what I'm wondering is, some of the work in biology and, you know, other more, you know, science, in quotation marks, oriented fields have also developed less reductive forms of formalism, you know,
right.
Various kinds of statistical mechanics and systems theory and things like that. I'm wondering if methodologically, a two-part question. I'm not aware of musicological work or music work in music theory, maybe even more press-pointedly, that's taken that up yet. Although I think that maybe I'm just unaware of it. So that's one question. I mean, are there new attitudes and new approaches to formalism developing within musicology and music theory as part of this that trade upon things like systems theory, which, you know, is very formalist but very non-reductive? And then the other part of that, I guess, is are people talking about that as a possibility? Do you see it as a prospect? Or is it the case that that formalism is not invited to the party yet, I guess is what I'm asking. Because it seems to me that that's an interesting kind of, you know, that hurdle hasn't been leapt. You know, people are a little more comfortable with materiality and with bodies. But the fact of phenomenology, which is a very, as it's evolved, a very non-formalist expression. I mean, Husserl was a bit formalist. after that, not, right? So I guess that's the big question. What about formalism on all of this?
There's a lot of different questions there, I think, but I think part of the solution is having a little bit more dialogue between, say, the formalist analyses and the sort of ethnographic work, the critical theory work, having a little bit more dialogue between all of these in order to question the premises and assumptions that each field is working from, basically, to be able to share some of the ideas. There is some analytic work in music, I think, that recognizes the notes and sounds as being meaningful and, you know, having a lot of cultural significance, of course, but you're right that that's not really being taken up from a phenomenological angle yet. That I can see.
Yeah, or even things like a statistical mechanical approach to music analysis, right, which would be ontologically very consistent with this sort of thing, but I don't think I wasn't aware of anybody having taken that step, and maybe it hasn't. Because Phil Togg was an interesting guy to bring up, right, because his music analysis is actually very traditional, although
right.
What he does with it is less so, you know, and that's sort of methodologically that, you know, it seems like we're at a stage where the old tools are being thought about in new ways.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if brand new tools, these shiny toys are appearing yet. It doesn't seem to be the case, but maybe.
Yeah, I think that's a great open question, is to try to see more of this happening.
Yeah, I've got a sort of a comment, I suppose, to William's question or whatever. And please correct me because I'm not living in musicology.
Thank you.
Right now. So when I was doing that sort of thing all the time, what reminded me of this, what you're talking about, William, here is, isn't post-tonal theory a bit like this? I mean, you've got numbers and you're, you know, at a certain point I understand you're translating the numbers to sound or whatever, but aren't we playing with numbers? I remember doing an analysis of a Varese piece, and I ended up, I was thinking formally, but I ended up putting numbers down on a
sure.
piece of paper
yeah.
and figuring out what the patterns
so
were.
Like four.
What?
So like four, like
yeah.
The problem is there's no discussion about what it means to anybody, right? So it's I mean, I think that this, I think that it's interesting, and this move Dana's making is really interesting to like insist that, you know, it's about the meaningfulness, right? And the formalism needs to follow that.
Right. I mean, the Society for Music Theory is doing very well right now. It's not that there's been a lack of music theory happening over the last couple decades. There's a lot of new concepts, and, you know, each journal edition has wonderful new ideas. So I don't think it's that there aren't new ideas coming out in analysis or anything like that, that there's some lack of attention. But perhaps there's this attitude of almost science versus opinion, you know, where form, musical form, is kind of the real work of how music is structured and how it comes together in a cohesive way, versus, you know, here we're going to be the cultural musicologists who examine reception and meaning, and that's totally separate. You know, I think part of the new materialist approach might be to look at how these notes are coming together in a way that has experience and culture and written into it, basically. So that's where I was talking a little bit more about the integration of these fields, because each is doing fine. It's just that there is this kind of stratification in a way, I think.
In fact, so one place you do kind of see that is, I mean, David Lewin's approach to analysis is very compatible insofar as it's one of the only formalisms that also insists that multiple interpretations are valid. And it presents itself as a way of graphing different possible hearings. But you don't have any of that Schenkerian thing or the Fort thing about, and this is, of course, the best and correct one. Right? Mm-hmm. I don't think music theorists are using it properly. I'll just say that, and, you know, from a cultural theory point of view. Mm-hmm. But the potential is absolutely there, and maybe there are people in the last 4 or 5 years who are, I don't know. But you know, that would be a better model, I would think, than the Fort post-tonal type thing. But again, it's a little bit more French.
Well, I think another good example to think about in relation to all of this is Susan McClary's work, because it, you know, I think in a very genuine and fundamental way integrated form and cultural value and so on from the ground up, that already intertwined kind of way. But Chris, I think, had a...
Chris was before, Chris and Kip, and then I'll
I was just going to ask, there was some interest a few years back in reviving Charles Kyle's idea of groovology, which seems to want to talk to the body, you know, and think about those things. I'm wondering, is there any connection, is there any step from groovology into some of the material things you're...
It's something, the groovology is not something I know about, unfortunately, so I can't comment. I'd love to learn a little bit more about that. If you want to mention some of your ideas, that might be...
Well, I mean, it was one way of trying to get away, actually, from, I guess, the formalist sense of talking about pitch and talking more about rhythm and how rhythm creates a feeling that the body takes in, or maybe the origin is from the body and is represented through sound or something like that. So there was, I'm trying to think how long ago this was now, probably like the late 90s, there was a whole ethnomusicology issue devoted to groovology, which approached it in a few different ways. One of them seemed very, maybe kind of systems analysis related, I'm not sure.
It sounds compatible with, I would say, at least the work of Ann Danielson that I mentioned in the paper.
I think she cites Felt and Kyle somewhere, or in the book version of it.
Yeah.
Okay, Kip.
Just about when you first started the paper, I was wondering if the types of sources we're going to be ultimately citing around new materialism were going to come out of music theory. But the people that I hear you speaking, in terms of Cusick and McClary and Kyle and others, that this is really something that's not starting from within that field.
True.
So we're talking about Levin as being somebody who might potentially be in there. Any other music theorists that we can be watching who might be looking at this, rather than people coming... Do you know what I mean? Coming from the new musicology and the music theorists were really rocking. Who would be the people that are alone tonight?
Yeah.
Or is it not?
Well, because the thought around new materialisms breaks down into three kinds of themes, you know, I tried to look at how each of these themes pertains to musicology and what kind of work is happening in musicology that relates to each of these themes. And so, you know, in that sense, there is work that is being done that seems kind of materialist in its orientation musicologically, that breaks from a post-structuralist or new musicology kind of tradition. But I don't think any musicologists that I know of are actually naming their work new materialist or even quasi-materialist really. It's a new field that hasn't really interacted with musicology in any kind of defined way, I guess. So yeah, all of the thought really seems to be coming from outside of musicology at this point. There is a recent book that came out in January called Carnal Knowledge, I forget the subtitle, that looks at new materialism in the arts. And I don't think there are any articles in that book that directly deal with music. They do deal with film, with dance, and with other performance arts, but they don't deal with music per se. So what I'm sort of looking at is what kind of musicological work has come out in the last couple of years that might critique and break from new musicology. And, you know, that's something that's still just emerging. So,
okay. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thanks.